Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
We are in our list of the transient events of the solar system.
Transient events. What is transient?
Something fleeting.
Something fleeting.
Happening in a brief moment in time. And since the solar system is supposed to be 4.5 billion years old, we shouldn't see many transient events, things that would only happen in a brief snapshot of time.
And yet we see all kinds of them. We've already gone through part one of the show. There's quite a long list there. We're going to do quite a few more here. We've got a website you can go to and look at all these. Now, last show, I thought you came up with a really good analogy of how to view this. So it'd be like me going to visit my Aunt Betty, and she's 112 years old, which is really weird in itself. You know, it's rare. I mean, people don't live that long. And then to show up at her doorstep and then go in and find out, oh, she died 5 minutes ago.
You just missed her.
Just missed her.
And then we found out that there are all these events that, in fact, we looked at Mercury, Venus, and Earth. And on Mercury, we saw the rapid decline of its magnetic field.
Yeah, 8% since 1974.
8%.
8%. That's a huge amount, given it's supposed to be 4 billion some odd years old.
Yes. Then Venus, the significant slowing of its rotation by 6 minutes per rotation, and recent volcanic eruptions. So that's transient for poor Venus.
Yeah.
Then the Earth, we've had our Earth's magnetic field declining significantly.
Yeah, over the last 150 years, it's declined 10%.
10%.
That's a lot. 10% in just 150 years.
Yes. And we have the inner core of the Earth is melting.
This wait a minute. Melting? I thought it was supposed to be billions of years old and it should be nice and cold and stable.
Things should have come
inert
to a stasis by now, right? But there's so much activity in places where there shouldn't be. So on the Earth, also on the bottom of the oceans, there are black smokers where the water was super critical, dissolving minerals and coming up at about 900 degrees Fahrenheit.
900 degrees Fahrenheit.
And then we touched on a really fun topic at the end of the last show, and that was all these tourist attractions, geological tourist attractions, where there are features that are supposed to be millions of years old. One of them was over 200 million years old, and lo and behold, you missed it.
Yeah, you missed it. Yeah. You know, like they got arches that collapse.
Arches National Park. Our kids rappelled not only off the cliffs there, but 100 feet off of an arch where you're going backwards off. And this is our 13, 14-year-old sons.
Yeah.
You're going backwards off the top of an arch, and there's nothing below you. That's scary.
Yeah, and I'm sure there was probably some guy there that says, oh, don't worry about this arch. It's been like this for millions of years. But you know what? Those things collapse. It's a good thing you weren't repelling when the thing collapsed.
Yeah.
You know, land bridges in Australia where there's a land bridge between two big rocks and that thing collapsed.
Yeah.
And there was tons of people that would visit that thing. And, you know, luckily there's nobody on it when that thing went down.
So, Fred, so that's Mercury, Venus, Earth, transient events. But the moon.
The moon.
We want to get to Mars, but we got to stop
make a stop at the moon.
Are there transient events happening on the moon? Now, is the moon supposed to be geologically active, or is it supposed to be dead?
Well, here's a quote from a textbook from about 20 years ago. It's a popular astronomy textbook. It says, there is no evidence that the interior of the moon now contains significant heat. The moon is now a cold, dead, geologically inactive world.
We're going to talk about volcanism, recent volcanism on the moon, many transient lunar events. In fact, TLPs, transient lunar phenomenon. And so why don't we go through a list of these?
Okay, sure. So in 2014, it's when we had the first direct measurement of oxygen and helium in the lunar exosphere. So what's up with that?
The moon is outgassing oxygen and helium. That's not supposed to be happening if it's 4 billion years old. And where do we get this from? Are we getting this from our fundamentalist sources? Are we getting it from National Enquirer? Well, no. We link to typically peer-reviewed science journals. And this article comes from the Journal of Geophysical Research, their space physics department. And that's one of the AGU publications, the American Geophysical Union. And so, Fred, this paper, like you said, from 2014, direct observation of sputtered lunar oxygen And that's shocking to the scientists who think, well, if the moon is 4.5 billion years old, why is it doing this?
Why is it still, this stuff is still coming out of it? Like helium, we know that's a real slippery, noble gas. What is it still? That should have leaked out a long time ago. It's easy. That thing gets around real easy.
Just like it's in zircon crystals on the Earth.
Yeah, that's how we know that.
It's still in there.
Yeah.
And
what's it still doing in zircons? Because they're supposed to be out of there.
Out of there.
But they're not. And when you measure the rate that they leave the zircons, it turns out it falls on a line that's about 5,000 years. Interesting. Interesting date.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Falls right along the predictions of a young Earth.
Yeah. So that was in 2014. So that's a recent discovery consistent with a young moon. How about, is that the only example?
Well, no, let's go back in 2014. Cambridge University Press came out with a book called The New Moon.
The New Moon. And in chapter 9, in fact, chapter 9 is titled The Inconstant Moon.
Inconstant.
Inconstant. In other words, all the changes on the moon. That topic earns its own chapter in the scholarly book from Cambridge. 2013, it turns out that photos taken every 20 seconds. This is the most scientifically verifiable observation project of transient phenomenon in particular lunar regions. They have confirmed centuries of claims, and we will link to that. We'll link to centuries of claims that people using telescopes see changes on the surface of the moon. So if there's something geological going on, like volcanism,
yep,
and then an astronomer documents from this date to this date, I have seen changes on the surface of the moon, and it was always rejected because of the old Earth, atheistic, darkened glasses that they look through. Like the Bible says, seeing through a glass darkly.
Yeah.
They often refuse to acknowledge the data until they have absolutely no choice because the data contradicts their model.
Yeah.
And so now we have photos taken every 20 seconds for a long period of time showing that indeed there are significant changes going on in particular lunar regions.
Yeah, they call them transient lunar phenomena. And Dr. Donald D. Young, he's a creation scientist. There's over 1,000 documented cases now of these TLPs just on the moon alone. So what's up with that? There's no way the moon is billions of years old, or else this would have all stopped long ago.
Mm.
In 2013, it's the moon dust argument.
The moon dust is back. Fred, I love this topic.
I love the moon dust thing because, you know, there was a period of time in the creation movement where they said, well, this isn't an argument that we should use because we can't validate it.
Well, that was Ken Ham in Answers in Genesis.
Yep.
And we have always rejected their conclusion that you can't use the moon dust argument, where the creationist said there's not going to be a lot of dust on the moon. And NASA, with the lunar lander, they thought there might be, you know, 100 feet
enormous
of dust. Who knows how much dust?
You know, they really took that into consideration.
Yeah, they prepared for that.
And we got it from the project manager's mouth, basically, right? Dr. Henry Richter. We interviewed him on this show. One of the foremost scientists
from the
early NASA years.
Of NASA, right, exactly.
And he said that they definitely had that in consideration with the dust on the moon.
And we linked to NASA's own history of the lunar exploration. And they talk about Dr. Gold and their concern of, you know, so much dust that the lunar lander would disappear. Well, it turns out that Dr. Walt Brown has for years, like we've done at Real Science Radio, maintained that this is a good argument. It's not a bad argument. Creationists should not avoid this argument. Fred, a couple years ago, we started calling out Answers in Genesis and asking them, reconsider this. You need to reconsider it or give us the evidence that this is a bad argument or start using the argument. You know what they've done? They have removed the moon dust from their list of arguments creationists should not use.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would love it if they would say why they removed it, or if they'd start using the argument.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty thrilled that they removed that from their cautionary article. So it turns out that NASA left on the moon an experiment to determine how rapidly dust was accumulating on the surface. It's been there now for going on half a century.
Mm-hmm.
So lo and behold, they just recently, 2013, looked at the data and said they're getting about a millimeter of dust per 1,000 years. So a millimeter, that might not sound like a lot, but that means in a million years, you have a meter.
Meter, that's a lot of dust.
That's a lot of dust, and there wasn't. There was just a little dusting of dust,
yeah.
Like an inch or two. But in 4.5 billion years, you would have miles deep of dust.
Absolutely.
On the surface
Absolutely.
Of the moon, and it's not there.
If the moon was 6,000 years old, you'd have 6 millimeters.
Right.
That's not very much dust.
No, that's not. So once again, the dust that's falling on the surface of the moon is falling at such a rapid rate that it couldn't have been doing that for the length of the moon's existence. So it must only be happening right now while we're looking in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
We got lucky again.
Yeah. And it's also interesting that if their solar system formation model is correct, which it's not, we did a whole show on list of problems with solar system formation.
Mm-hmm.
But if that nebular hypothesis was correct, well, then the early solar system would have had way more dust and debris than it has today.
Yeah.
So the rate of accumulation would have been greater.
Much greater. Much greater.
Yeah.
So what about in 2011, the small molten outer core was discovered on the moon?
Fred, that comes from a paper published in the journal Science. So this is the second most prestigious science journal in the world, Seismic Detection of the Lunar Core. And like you said, in 2011, has a half dozen authors of this paper. And this, again, is shocking to the old Earth atheistic view of origins. And again, it's evidence of transient events in the solar system and even on the moon.
Well, here's another transient event that's another really big nail in the coffin. In 2008, they're detecting radon. I mean, this thing is a short-lived radioactive gas. What's up with that?
Yeah.
There's no way that should be there if this thing's even a million years old.
And Japan's Kaguya mission, Fred, they've said that every lunar orbital mission capable of sampling a large fraction of the moon's surface in terms of radon sources has detected this episodic emission of this short-lived radioactive gas. That's significant.
Wow. How does that end up there?
Yeah.
So another one, 2006, a 3-square-mile region called Ina suggests recent volcanism.
Because of the colors and the lack of craters and the sharp edges on this area, it's like looking at a stamp on the surface of the moon. It's like, why is that like that? And so the scientists studying the moon, our natural satellite, they've said, you know what? This had to have had a recent volcanic eruption because, for example, there are no craters.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there's this creation article from back in 2003 where Dr. Don DeYoung, he outlined a whole bunch of these lunar transient phenomenon, and the problem goes on and on. In 1999, more radon outgassing.
Radon outgassing. And then go all the way back to the 1970s, and in a text called Planetary Geology, they documented that they're measuring heat flowing out of the moon, contrary to their old age thermal models. So that's a list of the transient events on the moon that we shouldn't be seeing, not one of them, but we're seeing all of them, along with the transient events of Mercury, Venus, Earth, and now the moon.
So, Bob, as we go out farther into the solar system, we now come upon Mars, and there's a report in the BBC News, and I like their headline, Mystery Mars Haze Baffles Scientists.
Baffles scientists.
Baffles scientists.
So, Mars, so we're looking at the planet, and then we're going to look at the moons, too, because Mars has a couple tiny moons, relatively speaking.
Yep.
And there better not be any transient events on those moons, because if there are, if there's transient events on Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars and our moon and Mars's moons all at the same time. Come on.
There's something going on here.
Something, because this stuff is not like Aunt Tilly, who's 112 years old. This stuff is all supposed to be billions of years old. And we're seeing these things that should only happen in a flash, in a moment. And we're seeing them all now, which is evidence that they're all young, like the Bible says. Well, it turns out that on Mars, they're seeing actually off Mars. They're seeing a plume rising up from the surface, Fred, way up into the atmosphere. In fact, higher than they ever thought the atmosphere went, to 200 kilometers above the surface of Mars.
Yeah, they think this thing's a cloud of carbon dioxide or water or water particles.
And they've watched this one particular plume for 20 days. So Mars can't be doing this for 4.5 billion years old. So it's a transient event. It's just happening now.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? Because these scientists, they always, you know, they use terms like shock, surprise, or they blame it on their equipment. You know, how many times have we heard that? We talked about, we had a couple examples last show in part one. Mm-hmm. Well, here this guy says, to begin with, I thought there was a problem with the telescope or camera. They're always trying to blame their equipment. Well, they don't get what they're saying because they got that dark lens of evolution looking at
like
the planet.
Pluto. We did the show on Pluto with the problem of solar system formation. And Pluto has such a huge swath of it that looks young. It looks new because it hasn't been collecting 4 billion years of dust. It should be sweeping up dust for 4.5 billion years, but then it wouldn't look so nice and clean.
Yeah, it looks nice and clean.
So somehow
young.
Young. As with many different bodies in the solar system, they say, well, it must be renewing its surface. It's got to be renewed.
Yeah.
Way out there,
yeah, way out,
a tiny, cold, little dead thing, and it's renewing its surface. So, Fred, but how about the moons? Because Mars has two moons, Phobos and Deimos. And if there are transient events going on these moons, that's it. I object. I'm going to work for NPR, National Public Radio. They need a new science show. But it turns out the Russian spacecraft called Phobos 2 detected outgassing from Phobos and Deimos. Now, it turns out that's also true of another moon called Enceladus, but we'll get there. But so from Mars, two moons, Phobos and Deimos, and they're outgassing, Fred, like our moon is.
What's up with that?
This is our Real Science Radio list of transient events in the solar system, and we shouldn't see one, really, and we're seeing them everywhere.
All kinds of them, and, you know, we're going to go farther out. So next planet is Jupiter. This is the biggest planet in our solar system, and it also has moons. And what's going on with its moons? Are there any transient events?
Well, Europa, it turns out, is erupting. And I love that, Fred, because the moons, it's one thing to have geologic events going on a planet. But now Jupiter is the first of the gas giants, so I don't think you'd call it a geological event if it was happening on Jupiter, like the big eye on Jupiter, the storm that's been going for centuries. But this is a relatively tiny body in space, a planet, Europa, and it turns out that scientists have announced that there are serious eruptions going on Europa.
And we're not talking little geysers, right? I mean, we're not talking, Yellowstone National Park. You've seen Old Faithful, right?
Yeah.
That thing shoots up pretty high.
Yeah.
I'd guess. I mean, I'm just going by memory. It looks like maybe 200 feet, would you say?
Yeah, I've been there too. Maybe 150 feet. Yeah something
okay.
like that.
Well, how about 125 miles?
No.
Yeah. That's what this geyser's doing, or these geysers
Come
are doing
from
on Europa.
From Europa, from the moon, Europa. Yeah. So they're
That doesn't
huge
sound like a dead piece of rock to me.
With water being sprayed upward. They have surpluses of hydrogen and oxygen. And Fred, this is fun because as we go out in the solar system, things should be colder. They should be increasingly dead.
That's right. Farther away from the sun.
Finding out that they are active. We find transient events. We're looking at them. We shouldn't see them. But lo and behold, there they are.
Again, this rock should be billions of years old. Where is it getting this source to be spewing up all this water? Yeah. And that high, 125, not feet, miles.
Right, but you see, it hasn't been happening for a long time. It's just
happening right now. It just kind of just started. We got lucky again. Need to buy that lottery ticket.
Right. How much water could Europa be spewing for what period of time?
Yeah, and we just were lucky just to see it now. Just decided to start doing it somehow.
So then there's another moon of Jupiter, which has a fascinating story to tell, and it's Io. It's spelled I-O, and we've been talking about it for a long time, and it turns out that this Io, what a fun story. We interviewed a jet propulsion laboratory, a former systems lead for the Cassini space mission, David Coppedge. You know David. What a dear friend of Real Science Radio. And he was at JPL, JPL's basically a branch of NASA.
Yeah.
And he was there when one of the scientists from the Cassini mission, now he ran one of the ground systems, computer systems for the Cassini mission. He was a team lead for that. But he attended the presentation of a Cassini scientist. This Cassini scientist said that the heat being given off by Io because of its geologic activity, that heat is 10 times greater than they could account for by something called tidal pumping. And we addressed tidal pumping in our global flood video.
Yeah, yeah.
Really fun.
RealScienceRadio.com.
Because of what the moon will do to the Earth. But Jupiter is a huge planet, and so it has moons orbiting it, and it pulls more forcefully on the near side of the moon than it does on the far side. And so that produces some amount of friction, some amount of heat.
It's a pumping kind of mechanism.
Tidal pumping. So you can calculate that, but there is way more heat being given off by Io, 10 times more heat than you can account for by tidal pumping. And that is not surprising to creationists because we know that the solar system is young. And in less than 10,000 years, all of these things that we see happening are explicable in a young Earth worldview where the Earth and the solar system have gone through a cataclysm because of the destruction of the paradise that God originally created.
That's right. You know, so this Io, it has also a whole bunch of volcanism, right? All kinds of volcanoes going off. In fact, scientists are claiming that it has 100 times more active volcanoes than the Earth. 100 times more.
Than the Earth
and does. This is so much farther out. And, you know,
and
again,
if you think of Yellowstone, you mentioned Yellowstone and going there and seeing Old Faithful, and you go to those pools, Fred, they're just so awesome. You see the water is 190 degrees and it's just bubbling, and they got this mud volcano. The mud is so hot. It's like an erupting volcano of mud.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that the average heat from Io, from its surface, is 50% more than you have at Yellowstone.
Yellowstone, yeah. I like what this one scientist did, too. He calculated back in 2003 that if Io had been erupting for this entire geologic time, billions of years, at only 10% its current rate, it would have erupted its entire mass 40 times over by now. Its entire mass.
Right.
So if it erupts all that mass, where does it get it back from?
Yeah, where does
is there an Oort cloud inside of this moon?
And where does it get all that energy? Where does it get all the heat? So Io is a great example of transient events occurring in our solar system that should not be happening, but they are. And overwhelmingly, we know why they are, because if there was one of these, you could chalk it up to coincidence. Two, you have to think, this is not a coincidence. Three, five, ten, dozens, because we're up to Jupiter. And it turns out that its moons, Europa and Io, have phenomenal evidence of transient events.
Yeah, so the next planet's really cool. You know, the rings of Saturn, they look really neat. I mean, the first time they showed pictures from the Voyager, you think it's fake. You think it's graphic artists.
I thought they were fake, Fred.
I did, too.
I thought they were Photoshopped before I ever heard of Photoshop.
Yeah.
There's just no way they were real.
They were real, and they're beautiful. I mean, it's real pristine. They're precise. If you haven't if you haven't seen the pictures of Saturn's rings, you need to go to the internet and Google it, and you'll see the pictures, and I'm telling you, you'll be surprised at how cool they look.
Yes, and it turns out that the world's leading expert on the rings of Saturn is quoted at NASA.gov. We link to the article. And he says that the rings are young. So the rings are young. And why is that? Because just like Pluto looks so bright and shiny, it hadn't been collecting space dust for 4 billion years. So they say, well, it must be resurfacing itself.
Yeah.
Well, how about the rings of Saturn? He says the first immediate obvious evidence that the rings are young, he believes they're young, is because of how bright and shining they are. And so they're not millions of years old accumulating dust and getting increasingly dark.
And again, this is a secular scientist from NASA that says The fact they're bright suggests they're young.
Yeah.
They are young.
I just love that. But they're not only bright, are they, these rings of Saturn?
Well, yeah, they look different today than they did just a few decades ago.
That's because of the Voyager spacecraft that went by. And, for example, in Saturn's F ring, they compared that from the early 80s to 2010. And did it look the same? I mean, if they're billions of years old, well, they can't be billions of years old because they're young. They must only be millions of years old. But if they're millions of years old, Fred, should they be changing dramatically from 1980-something to 2010?
Well, no. And, you know, this comes from space.com. And again, you look at the headlines, Saturn's weird, fast-changing ring baffles scientists.
Yeah.
You know, I just happen to chuckle when I look at the social media on here with the Facebook likes and the Twitters, and there's just a handful of them. Because, you know, I think, you know, secular people go to this place and they're looking for evidence against God because they hate God. Mm. And, you know, we talked about this evidence last year for the Big Bang, you know, and you looked at the article for the Big Bang about this phenomenon they said that proved the inflation theory.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
The gravity wave.
The gravity waves. And if you looked on their web
page, 25,000
likes. And who knows how many shares and Twitters.
Right.
And then when they reported that, in this ironic case, it was measurement error because of dust.
Yeah, right.
Then, you know, when they reported this was wrong, it's not evidence for the inflation theory.
Wasn't it like 41?
Yeah, 41 likes. Very few shares.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
Yeah.
It proves that it's a religion to them. This is their religious view. It's a blind faith, and that's what they're pushing on everybody.
Wow. Okay, so Saturn's rings are young, and they're changing. How about its moon, Enceladus?
Well, here we go again. We're back to Yellowstone National Park. So the article says that scientists discover 101 geysers erupting at Saturn's intriguing icy moon, Enceladus.
Yeah, and these are NASA scientists from, again, the Cassini mission, which our dear friend David Coppedge worked at.
Yep.
And so this is one geyser, Fred? You said they discovered a geyser?
No, not just Old Faithful. They discovered 101 Old Faithfuls.
101 on a moon of Saturn. I'd say that this is a transient event. They're talking liquid water and organic molecules. And you know what's interesting about that? It's a fluke of the terminology of the history of chemistry. When they say organic molecules, they don't mean that it came from something living, like plant matter or animal matter. Of course, we use organic to refer to that. But they are talking about the kinds of elements and compounds from carbon and others. And so you might hear about organic LEDs, lights, LEDs, and they have OLEDs, organic LEDs. And you think, does that mean out of rabbit? What do they make those lights out of? But they're not organic in that sense. But they're saying that there's liquid water. And what is going on here?
Yeah, that's a tiny moon. I mean, it's only like 300 miles across. I mean, that's like from here to like Wichita, maybe.
Yeah. So this is fun because we keep going out further and further from the sun. We get to smaller and smaller bodies, and they're erupting, and they're shiny, and it's all so fun. So after Saturn, Fred, I think we're out to the comets.
Yeah, so we've kind of mentioned Pluto before. So comets, you know, like short-period comets, those are comets that, you
there
know,
they go.
There
are
two classes. Yeah, there's long period and short period. And short period ones, they go around the sun more
frequently,
often, and every time they go by the sun, they lose between 5 to 10% of their mass. It just disintegrates into the sun.
It's burning off.
It's burning off.
And the tail isn't always behind the comet. The tail is behind the comet when the comet is approaching the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But then the comet goes around the sun, except for just a year ago, we lost the comet into the sun.
Yep.
We watched it go behind the sun, and it never came out the other side. That was sad.
Yeah.
Poor comet. But then as the comet is traveling away from the sun, its tail is in front of it because it's the solar wind that's blowing this matter off of the nucleus of the comet, and it's losing a significant amount of mass. So even the atheistic old earthers, they know they cannot be millions of years old, tens of millions, 100 million. And so where do they come from? So they invented something called
the Oort cloud.
The Oort cloud, which does not exist.
It does not exist.
Has not been found in all these decades.
Never been observed. It won't be ever observed. We can predict that on Real Science Radio. Yes. It'll never be observed because it doesn't exist.
It does not exist. They've also recently proposed a planet out beyond Pluto called Planet 9 or Planet X. And they need that to explain the transient features of the TNOs, the trans-Neptunian objects. There must be a massive planet, like, I forget what they said, 10 times or 100 times bigger than the Earth. I forget. Mm-hmm. But it's not there. They're not going to discover Planet X, and they're never going to discover the Oort cloud because it simply doesn't exist.
They're rescue devices for the problems with, again, their old Earth view.
So short period comets, in a sense, are transient events. They shouldn't be there, but they are if the solar system is 4.5 billion years old. And so the claim is, well, they're coming in from the Oort cloud, which formed at the furthest reaches of the solar system.
Just far enough where we can't observe it.
Right. But it turns out, Fred, that comets, and you have mainstream astronomers that are wrestling with this, comets have minerals that are characteristic of the inner solar system, like the Earth, like the olivine family.
Yeah.
And they say, they come out and say, how could they have these minerals from the inner solar system if they formed in the outer solar system in the Oort cloud? Well, they didn't. They came from the Earth.
They came from the Earth, and they were part of the global flood.
Yes.
The comets and meteors and meteorites and all that good stuff shot up from the fountains of the Great Deep and achieved escape velocity.
Yeah.
And that's why the moon is pockmarked on one side so much more than the other side.
Yeah, that's right. We cover that in our global flood and hydroplate theory video.
Because when God said things were very good on day 7, I don't think that would have included pockmarking the moon, do you?
No. And all these dangerous bullets flying around the solar system, the mavericks of the solar system, including meteors and asteroids, meteoroids, and even comets that have destroyed buildings.
Yeah.
And blown out 100 windows when we have impacts on the Earth, and certainly any number of animals killed. And so when God created the heavens and the earth, all that dangerous stuff was not in place. That is all a result of the global flood.
Which was judgment.
God's judgment, the crust of the earth cracking open and wrapping around the earth like a seam on a baseball, 40,000 miles of it. Why is the crust of the earth cracked around the entire earth? It's because the fountains of the deep broke forth and expelled debris and water. Some of it reached escape velocity. About 1.5% of it hit the moon. And the stuff that hit the moon, most of it hit on one side of the moon. And that's what caused the near side to be so severely beat up, whereas the far side is only sprinkled.
You know what else it hit?
What?
I mean, it took a long time. The International Space Station.
Oh.
Remember?
Oh, the debris from the fountains.
They found sea plankton on the International Space Station.
When they were cleaning the windows outside.
That's right. Yeah. The Russians discovered it, and NASA's like, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
No, they, you know, they put their fingers in their ears, la, la, la. They didn't want to believe it. They still don't believe it.
We did that fun show, our Real Science Radio's list of biological matter in space. And there's a lot of debris out there from the fountains of the Great Deep. And these are from really amazing sources. That's a fun show to listen to.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so Fred, we've done Mercury, Venus, Earth, our moon, Mars, and the moons of Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and its rings, and its moon, and comets. So we're almost at the end of the list. Asteroids. Do asteroids have any unexpected transient events?
Well, they look like comets.
Some of them, right? And they're not supposed to look like comets. They're supposed to be totally different, but they have the same source. They both came from the debris ejected from the fountains of the Great Deep. And as that matter left Earth's gravitational influence, gradually it coalesced to become asteroids, which are flying rock piles of millions of rounded rocks. And they're rounded because they formed on Earth and they were ejected from 50 miles under the crust. As they came up, that's how they got rounded. And comets are like dirty snowballs of debris and water ice. And so you just said that there are asteroids that look like comets. That's not supposed to be. They're supposed to be totally different.
That's right.
Right.
In fact, this scientist said until about 10 years ago, it was pretty obvious what a comet was and what it wasn't, but that's all changing now.
That's all changing. So there is a great article at earthsky.org about an asteroid. They now say it's an active asteroid, and it has this enormously long tail. And this is happening more and more. In fact, the Hubble Space Telescope has found another asteroid that has what?
It has six comet-like tails on it. And guess what? The headline says it surprises astronomers. Another big surprise for them.
Right. And they've noticed that this tail structure, they call it an oddball asteroid, and it has changed dramatically over just a 2 weeks period of observing it as it's releasing dust. So this is pretty cool. They now know it's been ejecting dust for 5 months periodically.
And notice what they say in here, though. They got to get their evolutionary spin. They've shown that the ancient asteroid, they use that buzzword ancient, you know, it gives the illusion that this thing's, you know, super old. Yeah. But hey, it just happens to be now doing all this transient stuff.
Mm-hmm. And Fred, you know what's interesting about the asteroid belt? As you leave the Earth's orbit and head toward the asteroid belt, there's a lot of junk in the asteroid belt, right? Mm-hmm. Where do you find more debris, more dust? Around Earth's orbit or around the asteroid belt? If the atheists were right, as you approach the asteroid belt, you should get more and more dust. It's the opposite. The dust is centered around Earth's orbit.
That's interesting.
Because that's where it originated from.
Yeah.
Whereas the larger rocks, there is an effect from the sun and the sun's radiation that will propel larger bodies rapidly out through the solar system. And then it gets to where Jupiter will sort of shepherd them and pull them all into its sphere.
Which is really good for the
influence.
Earth. You know, that's really good.
Yeah. Thank the Lord for putting Jupiter out there to protect
us. Vacuum cleaner of the meteor.
Things could be way worse.
Yes.
So, Fred, finally, there are the TNOs, the trans-Neptunian objects. And this is a great one to end with because there is a paper published. You know, the atheists say we use science that's out of date.
Yeah.
They used to say that a lot, right?
It's amazing that they say that.
Yeah. And they say that because Henry Morris wrote The Genesis Flood and Scientific Creationism. And most pastors don't know how to research science journals, especially before the internet was popular. And so they would get their material from Henry Morris's two books. And so the references to the science journals were out of date. They were 15 years old, 20, then 25 years old. But the creation movement is constantly on the cutting edge of scientific discovery. Here's a young Earth creationist who published a paper in the world's maybe the most prestigious astronomy journal.
The Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society.
Yeah, this is such a prestigious journal.
It is.
And so this article goes back, what, 40 years ago? No, 30, 20? 10, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago. This was published in This was published in 2016, and it's an analysis of the TNOs and a proposed theory to explain their origin. And this is such a fascinating paper. We're going to have to do a whole show just on this, but it documents that these TNOs have astounding orbital characteristics. And these characteristics show that if they were out there for millions of years or a million years, they would lose their similarity. They would be randomized. They have to have had a recent origin from the inner solar system, from the inner solar system, from one of the bodies, some kind of cataclysmic event on one of the bodies of the inner solar system produced these TNOs, which the sun then propelled out to their current locations. Now, he did not say which body in the inner solar system, but there's not too many to choose from. There's like Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars. You get to pick like four of them. And it turns out that Earth is the body with the history that has the entire crust cracked because of the fountains of the Great Deep. So I would say that qualifies as a TNO transient event to have all these orbits sharing astounding orbital characteristics that could only be that way for a short period of time. Imagine that. They're 4 billion years old, and we're looking at them
right
all
now.
Sharing these astounding characteristics.
And this is from Dr. Robert Brown from the Air Force Academy, young Earth creationist.
Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. Yep, professor of, in fact, he's in the Department of Astronautics there.
Yeah, so they say we're behind, but it's ironic. You know, they still got fraudulent embryos in the textbooks, and they got Lucy, and they got museums showing false drawings. They're the ones who do the false science, out-of-date science. The Haeckel fraud is like over 100 years old.
The fraudulent drawing of the embryos, saying that it came from a fish and then a reptile.
Yeah, yeah.
All that make-believe stuff, and we had a tail and all that. And then they still do the nebular hypothesis, which we've quoted a scientist from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He is their planet database manager. And he says that story we had about the origin of the solar system, it was a beautiful story. And now we know it was plainly wrong.
Beautiful, but wrong.
Right. And it was a pretty story.
Yeah.
Just like Darwinism is a pretty story that's false.
Yeah.
So, Fred, that is Real Science Radio's list of the transient events of the solar system. And there's a lot of them. At the beginning, we put out a challenge to our listeners. If we are making these up, if we're exaggerating them, then you could dismiss this evidence. But if these things are actually happening and we're documenting them from reliable astronomical sources, then you have to come to terms with why is it that a solar system that's supposed to be 4.5 billion years old, everywhere you look, there are transient events that we are seeing right now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
There's another transient event that happens like maybe once a year.
What?
Our telethon.
Oh, yeah. The Real Science Radio and Bob and Yurt Live telethon. The goal is $30,000.
About a third of the way there.
Yeah. And we really need your help. So if you enjoy Real Science Radio, if you want this program to reach, let's say, another 10,000 people this year, then please help us. There might be someone who could write a check to meet the goal. And we could $20,000 check. There could be. Somebody might be able to write a $10,000 or a $5,000 check. And if you could do that, how thankful we would be. I mean, Fred and I would come and paint their house. It depends. I'm not a good painter, Fred.
Yeah.
But we'd be so very thankful. To Fred Williams, this is a labor of love. Fred, you get paid, what, enough for gas?
Zero.
Zero.
But that's for, I like that. Yeah. That's okay with me.
Fred, and in fact, not only is it a labor of love, and for Jamie Schofield, too, who
our
for
producer,
many years has produced and recorded, the board operator, the engineer, edited
provided
the programs.
Provided us with good information and humor. Yeah.
It's a labor of love, but then also you guys spend your own money to make this work. So thank you so very much. But those in the audience, if there's somebody who can help, a one-time donation, we'd be so grateful. Some people make automatic monthly donations. You could call us at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. And no matter what time it is, day or night, if we're not here, just leave your name and number. We'll get back to you. Some people call. They leave their name. They don't leave their number. So what do? You pray that they call back. Or you go to our website, realscienceradio.com. or rsr.org, click on the store, and right there you could donate one time or monthly, or you could browse the science department. And we highly recommend Walt Brown's book, In the Beginning, our video, The Global Flood and the Hydroplate Theory, but then also we have the most fabulous science videos. You'll just love them. And everything has a 30-day money-back guarantee. So please, if you could at all help, we need your help. We're so thankful that you tune in. Please share the show with others. And until next time, this is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.